I keep getting saved over and over again here, and it's been glorious. I'm excited to be a part of all this.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
By now, most of you are aware of the passing of Richard Mull, our friend and confidant and board member of Mike Williams Ministries, during this week. The unannounced voice that you will be hearing from time to time during this PowerCast is that of Richard Mull's. So let's dive in right now to some of Richard's wisdom.
Whenever I go to the doctor, there's always something new that they find when they look, and I tell them to stop looking, because every time they look, they find something new. And I've got good blood pressure, and my heart's beating constantly at a normal pace. My pulse is normal. My brain is subnormal, but we're working on that. At least, the Lord is. And he's helping me get it renewed.
What do you mean by that?
Well, he's feeding me the truth of the gospel. It's in my heart already, and it's being fed from my heart to my brain. Every time I hear it, I'm getting saved in my thoughts, feelings, and my emotions. My mind is being transformed, being renewed by that gospel, by the truth of the gospel, because there's other gospels out there that aren't the gospel at all, according to Paul, and the truth of the gospel will give you the liberty, the freedom that Christ has set us free, to enjoy that 100% each and every day, and whatever comes along doesn't bother me, because I know that reality is found in Christ. All this other stuff is just temporary. I'll be out of this life and into the new life after physical death, not the new life that I've been given in Christ, because I'm living that now, and I love it. It's so good for me, It just does everything. It lifts me up. It gives me strength. It encourages me. I'll call people up and talk about the gospel to encourage them, and they end up encouraging me. It's a wonder, this freedom, this liberty we have to just do what we want to do that's in our heart, and I love that. It doesn't get any better than Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, where Paul says, "Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage." Well, the word liberty used here in this particular verse 1 of Galatians chapter 5 is from the Greek for politia, which means the community or the commonwealth, the combined group, everybody. It's a complete liberty. It's not just for one person or two people or 10 people. It's for everybody. And yet the clergy in this nation and around the world has tried to hide this liberty and say it's a mystery and it'll be revealed one day along with the gospel and all these other things that are in the Bible. Well, I'm telling you right now, it's already been revealed. It's in everybody's heart. They need to hear the gospel, the truth of the gospel, so that liberty can establish itself in their life and get into their mind and allow them to just live freely. Verse 13, chapter 5, Galatians. "For brethren, you have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another." How can we serve one another if we don't know we have that liberty? And the word liberty here in verse 13 is the word freedom, which is eleutheria in the Greek, eleutheria. It means freedom, complete and total freedom. There's nothing missing there. But also in verse 1 of Galatians chapter 5, one of the times liberty is used there means to be free, made free from mortal liability. And until we know we're free from liability, how can we take responsibility? And I'm taking responsibility for my own life. I'm taking responsibility for his righteousness, and I'm accepting it as my own. And that's what gives me such joy. I don't have to do anything to be right with God. I just be me. Boy Wonder over here, Chemo Boy, Doughboy, Dr. Do-Nothing. I'm having so much fun, I'm telling you.
All right, hold on for a second. First of all, getting back into the passage in Galatians there, when he mentions it, don't allow it to be an excuse for the flesh, I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. What does he mean by that, do you think?
He means don't think that what you do in the flesh is going to make you right with God. There's no righteousness coming out of the flesh. So we just need to understand that if we accept his righteousness, it's in you already. It's been given as a gift. Just let it wash over you. You don't even have to unwrap it. It's
right.
There.
Right. But, Michael, I thought the flesh was sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yes, and the reason we thought that's because that's what we were told.
Gospel Revolution.
Hi, Mike. Welcome back.
Thank you, Barris. It's good to be here.
Where have you been?
I have been in Canada. I have been in California. And those trips certainly were back-to-back.
Man, I don't know about you, but that would have taken it out of me. So I take my hat off to you, Mike. Mike, while you were away, was it, I think, that the shooting in Colorado happened and... Oh boy, that has sure stirred up a storm, as usual. I was reading on CNN in their faith section. It was headlined, "Where Was God in the Aurora Massacre?" What do we say when people say, "Why does God allow this to happen or that to happen or the other thing to happen?"
Well, you see, we have real conflicting ideas about these things. And even though we'll say it was the will of God, we'll start searching for why it happened. And those two things just don't go together. If it was God's will, stop looking for why it happened. Don't examine who could have done what, because there's nothing that could have changed if it was God's will. This is a subject that I've covered in great detail. It's been one of my heart's desires to understand, because the statements that are made and have been made over the years have been varied, and of course the one that I've settled on, I mean, we're kind of like blue jays landing from branch to branch, you know, as far as what we actually think about something like that. I remember starting out in the Baptist church and everything was the will of God, and then of course I became charismatic and only the good things were the will of God and the bad things were the will of the devil. And it was me in the middle who was supposed to see to it that one or the other had or did not have their way. It seems that no matter where you stand on any one of these perceptions, that term comes up. Well, yes, I understand. I don't believe that God did it, but he allowed it. We have this thing in us that needs to have some conceptual way of understanding that God is in control of daily life. And I remember doing this even back then, of this issue of saying God allowed. And if you look at that, it really is actually a very cruel thing for a God, a father, a mother, to allow some really horrible tragedy to take place in their child's life. And then the understanding of freedom began to come. So here is where the rubber meets the road with the issue of freedom. You know, we're either free or we're not free. And I believe that the gospel really does help us to understand our freedom. Now, we have been delivered from God's wrath. We've been delivered from God's anger. We have been delivered from God's judgment. And you know, Christianity can't let even those go, that we are literally freed from that. But true freedom is when you are free. And it doesn't change the one who gets the credit for setting you free. So this in Colorado wasn't an issue of God allowing it. I think I just heard a great man just a couple of minutes ago say it wasn't God who allowed it. It was us, and that we allow these things. And I have to tell you, that was Barris Bartlett who made that great comment, and I agree with it. Because in the scope of things, of course, you know, if it is God's will, why are we looking for could we have prevented it? Were there signs? Where along the way did this go wrong? And we always find there were signs, but we missed them And even though we'll say it was the will of God, we'll start searching for why it happened. And those two things just don't go together. If it was God's will, stop looking for why it happened. Don't examine who could have done what, because there's nothing that could have changed if it was God's will.
Reading down through the comments on this CNN thread, Mike, I see a few people have had some pretty heavy comments to make. A fellow called Lenny was saying, we as a country have been telling God to go away. We've told him to get off our currency, out of our schools, out of our Pledge of Allegiance. We've seen this doing the rounds for about 5 years or maybe even 15 years now. How can we expect God to give us his blessing and his protection if we demand that he leaves us alone?
You know, this argument has been gone through so many times. I remember way back in my earliest recollections of all of these battles taking place. And, you know, there's always this cataclysmic, you know, if you take prayer out of school, there's going to be this cataclysmic result of God's judgment. If abortion ever was legalized, there was going to be this cataclysmic destruction come to the U.S. If anybody ever accepted gay rights, there was this cataclysmic destruction that was coming. And there are states that have full gay rights now. There's states where people are getting married. There's places where people get abortions, even though in a couple of southern states, it's kind of hard to have that happen. It's been said about everything. If women received the right to vote, this was supposed to be a horrible, catastrophic, judgment-bringing event.
If slaves were set free.
Yes, and when the slaves were set free, if we do that, it will bring God's judgment to us because, you know, Christianity, in many forms of it anyway, defended slavery by the Bible, which slavery is validated by the Bible. It is not validated by the gospel, however it is in the Bible, and comments are made about it.
Jesse R. said, liberals have made it impossible for God to be anywhere during the upbringing of a child. And he goes on to say, we can't have any religious connotations in schools, libraries, and so forth. We should be looking in the mirror. We as a society are the reasons these massacres happened. So I guess that's another person saying what you just referred to there. Someone said, how do you know the people that were killed didn't go to hell? And how exactly does any of this show that there is a reason? Reason is obviously something that you have replaced with belief, and you threw out logic with it.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
It's a bit of everything in there.
It is a bit of everything. I'm not really sure what that one is trying to say.
Here's another guy, Kyle, who says that God doesn't exist, so he wasn't anywhere. Get over it. A man was evil, and he was evil because he was crazy.
Yes. As far as logic is concerned, if you apply that there is no God, that is the smoothest logic in any of these threads. You know, just asking the question, where was God in all of this, is that in itself, Barris, is the demonstration that we have a big job ahead of us, because nobody knows where God is. Where is God? He is in every one of us. Where was God where the shooter was concerned? He was in him also. He's in the people that run the jail. He was in the people that the psychiatrist who was trying to counsel this young man. God is in everyone. And this was something that took place 2,000 years ago at the cross. The reason that it is vitally important that we come to grips with this one doctrine, the doctrine of one, of the entire human race and God being one, is that's the only place where we can look and actually see what is causing some of this stuff instead of bringing it into superficial spiritual terms. If we let our spirituality be that which is sealed forever, and then let the natural be that which we will be trying to figure out forever, maybe, but maybe we'll be able to actually come to resolve about some of these things if we stop combining and mixing the natural with the spiritual.
Now, on a another website called theblaze.com. Somebody says they were protected by God. A shooting victim survives a bullet through the brain after a rare defect miraculously becomes a lifesaver. This reminded me of the people in World War I and World War II, and they had a New Testament in their pocket which saved a bullet going through it and killing them. And of course, this was called miraculous, and it was the Bible that saved them. I guess there's plenty of reasons for people to at least suspect that, even if it's not true.
Well, you know, my question is, how many bullets have to pass through how many people before God gets to show that he can perform a miracle by allowing a bullet to pass through a defect in someone's brain instead of passing through gray matter? This is just, it's lunacy. It is just lunacy. It's like, okay, so, you know, now if we had stood the girl up and said, okay, we're going to practice here. I'm being very facetious here, and I hate to do that in such a crisis as what this has been, but we really have to bring ourselves to stop and think. If we had, you know, stopped and we had made some indication, okay, we're going to try this, but we're going to pray, we're going to believe God that somehow this bullet's going to pass through your brain, we might have some semblance to say, okay, see, we tried it, and it worked. She's alive. But we had to go through 12 people being killed and almost 70 altogether being shot for this bullet to find its way through a particular area in a girl's brain. We call that miraculous because miraculous is supposed to be something good. If you're looking for the statistical possibility as being the miraculous, then it's going to be absolutely miraculous that someone gets caught right in the dead center of a tornado, even in Tornado Alley in this country, and winds up being killed based on our definition of miraculous, except we've refused to take that to that side of our thinking because miraculous is supposed to be something good.
Now, if we use the same logic, don't we have to say that God really had it in for the 12 people who were killed?
It is exactly right. You have to keep processing that all the way through. And that is the thing with evangelical Christianity, is that when one doctrine kicks in, you have to become brain dead to the other one. And you're absolutely sure about this one, but God forbid somebody bring up the other one that you believe also, which is in direct contradiction to it. We talk about it being the judgment of God. We talk about some being miraculously saved and delivered from this. As we talked about, I think also one young man who was hit by three of the bullets with two different guns and survived. He's saying that he became a believer a year ago, and he's been going to church, and he believes in Jesus, and he prayed, and that's why God saved him. So, these things are just off the charts, that these are palpable for us, that we will even listen to them as viable explanations for what is going on. It proves we definitely need a gospel that is the power of God.
I mean, Mike Huckabee here is saying, there's no question about it. He says the Colorado shootings are a direct result of society abandoning God. How do we get to be in the place where faith must replace logic?
Jesus authored and finished faith. Faith is a finished deal. All we can do is acknowledge what he finished. The issue of faith for us now, Paul talked about, he said that our faith may become effectual through the acknowledging of every good thing that is in us in Christ Jesus. The only extension of faith we now have is to acknowledge what has changed. My faith doesn't change anything. And that's where we have taken terms of judgment. Judgment was finished at the cross. Wrath was finished at the cross. The sin was finished at the cross. Faith was finished. Jesus was the author and finisher of faith, even though italicized in that verse is the word our. It literally is saying in Hebrews that Jesus authored and finished faith. Faith is a finished deal. All we can do is acknowledge what he finished. That's all we can do. So when we take those terms, Barris, and bring them into this dogfight of Christianity and try to figure out who has faith and who doesn't, it absolutely is just a distraction away from the work of the cross and what was accomplished 2,000 years ago. And let me plug my new series from Canada, Living by Faith, by Michael Williams from Calgary, Alberta. Was just finished and is now available on download and will be available on CD. I think the people are going to really enjoy this series.
A lot of these folks in Aurora, Colorado, were saying that God actually held them in his hand and he saved them. Maybe a couple of decades ago, there was a young girl who was shot at school for, did she not stand up and say, yes, I'm a Christian? And then the shooter shot her for that?
I think that was Columbine, yes.
Columbine? So now we've got a situation where religion says, oh, they were saved by God, and yet this girl, she was, what, shot?
Because she believed in God. Yeah, see, and there again is this horrible contradiction that nobody seems to want to resolve, is that one says that this all happened because of an absence of God, and yet this other young girl got shot because of the presence of God. Which one do you want? Come on, you know? One is somebody's martyr, and the other one is somebody's terrorist, you know? There is a great lack of knowledge of the gospel, is why we're talking about it in these terms. The very power that created the universe, the very power that we talk about that parted the Red Sea, the very power of God that, quote, stopped the sun in the sky, all of that was the power of God, Barris. But now the power of God is information. Correct information is what the power of God now is. Paul said the gospel, which the gospel is just information. The gospel, this good news, is the power of God. And it's not only just the power of God, the same power that created the universe, but it's the power of God to save the soul. The very part of that young man that desperately needed salvation is the thing that was needed instead of us trying to figure out where God was. It's what we should be asking is where the gospel wasn't. Could the gospel have done something to alter or prevent this in any way?
That's me, but today I'm the king of the can.
Well, all right, I was just trying to avoid the whole discussion.
No, that was just background noise to get your attention over here because I'm doing not too badly today, much better than yesterday, but it's been a real battle, and accidentally my phone got switched to speakerphone instead of, you know, just handheld. So the king of can is here.
My mind is not for rent. No religious rules for Lent. Grace and peace on me sets. And I ain't got no regrets. But now that I've made it home, never more my mind will roam. All the world's here with me. I'm king of the can.
Today I'm the king of the can.
One thing that you've said, Michael, that I think is so profound is that you really don't know that you're healed about a certain situation until you can start joking about it.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that has been part and parcel with our discussions with Richard and Grant is the humor. I mean, Richard just referred to himself as the king of the can because, well, you know, we'll just leave it up to your own imagination to figure that one out, folks.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing that when you are operating in a rational, vital, logical, mental disposition, the gospel is influencing your mind, that humor does come out of it.
Really does, and it just seems to accelerate. Usually humor doesn't come until a long time after a tragedy or even the process of a very difficult situation. And Grant is very much coming out of his situation, minus the lower part of his leg, of one leg. Richard does not know for sure what the outcome of his situation will be. He's fully prepared to live, and he is fully prepared to die, just to be very honest about it.
Well, actually, Richard does know what the end of his situation is, like we all know what the end of our situation is. We just don't know when it's going to happen, that's all.
The end of that one, yes, we all know. But as far as this particular situation, he doesn't know the end of this one. But, you know, and humor has been a part of it. I mean, my goodness, I had to resist when I was spoke with Grant after the first time, and I mean it was just so amazing. And you know, my heart was so out to Richard and to Grant. Of course, I mean we were just together here, all of us together, and even Richard was here via the computer again, and Grant was here with us, and we're just it was just like one family. And you know, I'm having to resist telling Grant that, you know, when I get up to Indiana, I want to take him out to IHOP, you know. And that's been the amazing thing about all of this. See, we normally see the process go through, you know, the grieving process of loss. And I think that Greg corrected me on the webcast, which I was really grateful that he did, because I saw that it's not that we don't go through that process. It is accelerated to almost the speed of light, it seems, to where that one part and the other part are all going forward so fast that you come to that point to where that the end result is there. The emotional end result is there while the event is going on. And that is the ability to see the humor in it. And so this has been amazing to me. Both of you guys have amazed me beyond anything. And not only do I love both of you, Richard and Grant, but you got a whole lot of people that love you and care about you, not only in your personal lives, individually, but in the gospel revolution around the world.
You guys recently have been talking to each other too. I would have liked to have those sessions recorded, fellas.
Yes.
Hey, Glenn, this is Richard. I had talked to Michael this morning. I talked to Grant this afternoon, and then I talked to Jeff Robertson, and I got saved during every one of those calls. And I'm telling you, it's a multiple thing. It's like, you know, like multiple orgasms, except it's different. It's the gospel saving your soul. It's fantastic. I had something interesting happen today. I got a jury summons recently, and I was supposed to call in I'm supposed to call in December 18th to see if they're going to, you know, use me. So checked with them. I called up the jury service folks, and I said, you know, I'm going through some medical things now, and I may not be available during that time. In fact, you know, where I'm sitting right now, who knows? I might be expired by then. And the lady says, well, you'll still have to call in. And I says, well, I'll be sure to do that then on the 18th of December. And I thought that was hilarious. Well, you'll still have to call in, even if you die, you know. Okay, well, that's good. Thank you. Nice of you to share that with me, young lady.
Gospel Revolution.
Moses, Kenya, the School of the Scriptures, and anybody they're affiliated with. There was a song written here, a musical song years ago, called The Lion Sleeps Tonight. And in Kenya, I guarantee the lion sleeps tonight. But the lion of the tribe of Judah never sleeps. His spirit is working in the hearts of the people, everywhere. So they need to just continue to just get that gospel out and get people to hear that thing and get those people saved, get that salvation moving. For the Lion of the Tribe of Judah never sleeps. And I thank God for that. I think it would be wise for you, for your health, mental health, physical health, any kind of health, to get the truth so you don't have to be in bondage, you don't have to be burdened down with somebody else's yoke. For Christ said, take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy, my burden is light. And he's right. It's freedom. Humanity has won its battle. Liberty now has a kingdom, and the kingdom is the kingdom of God, and it's in everyone. That kingdom, that freedom, that liberty is in everyone, and we need to get a handle on that, and the only way to get it is through the truth of the gospel.
Listen, in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar, you can listen with your whole family.
When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Today I was over at the cancer center, the treatment center, where I go to have my blood checked to make sure I can continue my treatments without, you know, being anemic or whatever. And there was a young lady over there, and she's probably in her early 30s. Her name is Tracy. She has three children. Underwent colon cancer surgery here several months ago and has been on treatment now for, oh, maybe 3.5 months. And I saw her, and usually when I see her, she's pretty up and smiling and happy. And I saw her today, and she was very sad. So I had to ask her what was wrong. And she said, "It's you." I said, "Why? What's wrong with me?" And she says, "Well, I heard about your situation and the fact that the first round of chemo didn't work and your cancer got worse and you got a lot of pain in your bone and you just haven't been able to get the right treatment to make it go away, and they tell me mine's gone basically and I've got a few more treatments and I'm done." She says, "I feel so sorry for you." I says, "No, please don't. You have a family and children, and I'm just so happy that everything's working out for you." And she just couldn't believe that I was so up about all this, that it didn't bother me. And it really touched my heart that she was concerned about me. And I almost broke down and cried in front of her, but I didn't. I just encouraged her and told her that things would get better, and no matter what, that I belong to the Lord, so it's in his hands, and he's using the doctors whatever way. So I wanted to share that because it was kind of special to me today. In the cancer center, this was a first for me. Of all the people that I've met in there over the months that I've been going there, it really touched me in my heart. Dr. Dolittle calling in to talk to some animals. Are you have any animals there?
We've got some animals, my friend.
Well, like I've told so many others, I speak toucan and African gray parrot, but I don't do pink flamingos. I'm not a stranger to pain. I've been in the military for over 21 years, served in combat, got beat up, shot down, shot at, crashed in aircraft, you name it. I'm no stranger to pain, and when your focus is on what you need to be doing at the time, whatever it was, like rescuing somebody or picking up something, somebody off a landing zone or fighting back the enemy or just preserving your own life, you don't focus on pain. You focus on the thing at hand that is most dear to you, the thing that is deep in your heart. And at that time, it was survival. And the pain is secondary, tertiary. You don't even notice it. Even when you get a foot blown off or a hand blown off or whatever, you don't really focus on the pain. If you've got a purpose in mind and a focus going on within you, it's the same way with the gospel. When you have the gospel in you and your focus is on the gospel and on Christ and what he did at the cross, and knowing that you're one with God, you don't have to focus on these other things and let them overwhelm you, overcome you, overburden you. You just keep your focus on the gospel. And these other things just kind of fall by the wayside, and they just kind of drop off like, you know, feathers off a bird eventually when he's growing new feathers or whatever, scales off a lizard or a snake, shedding his skin. It doesn't matter. It's just a natural process that happens. And these things just fall by the wayside.
We appreciate you calling, and we hope you got saved tonight.
Oh, definitely. The whole time I'm listening, I'm getting saved. I love every minute of it. All right. Bye, Michael. Bye, Glenn.
Bye-bye. For those that don't know, Richard is battling two forms of stage 4 cancer. And yet, still, I think it's an every other Friday situation. He goes back to the corporation where he is now has a permanent disability from, and he goes back there and shares the gospel in a conference room, which is available to several hundred people across the nation via the recordings that he does there. And always is such a great encouragement to everyone. They're all the time asking him, you know, how he's doing it, why he's doing it. But Richard has a real passion in his heart to just love on people. I don't know a greater lover of people other than God himself than Richard Mull. He just loves people. And he loves people I don't like. But anyway, they're amazed at what he's doing, and to be able to have this relationship that I have now and have had for almost 20 years with Richard has been a very rich thing. And the things that he has understood about the gospel that has gotten much stronger in him. He's not looking for God to heal him. He's not looking for a supernatural intervention into his situation. But because he is freed from all of the superficial spirituality of Christianity or any other religion on the face of the earth, because he's freed from that, his mind and his emotions are free to deal with cancer. You see, when you begin to spiritualize cancer, that it's from God, it's the devil, or a prayer will do it, or cast the devil out of him, whatever the external spiritualization of cancer can be, and believe me, throughout the religious world, it can be a myriad of things. But you see, Richard has called all those things home, and he said, nope, and one at a time, over the years, Richard and I both have gone through this process pretty much together, pretty much in sync. And but he's tossed those things away to where that his spirituality is rooted in nothing but who he is, not what he does. And now what he does about cancer can be done with a clear mind and without emotions of self-pity, without emotions of woe is me, or without the emotions of, you know, my life could end. He embraces all of those possibilities, but it is with a degree of stability that I'm telling you, I don't think I've ever seen before.
Gospel Revolution.
I really was encouraged while the summit was going on to write something for Michael for his birthday, because I knew his birthday was coming up, and I know he's been claiming to be 60, and he's really not even 59 at the time, but we'll give him that. We round up, okay? Except where taxes and bills are due, and then we round down. So here we go with something I wrote for Michael for his birthday. It's called Mr. 59. Happy birthday, Mr. 59. You're over the hill and way out of line. You're ancient, archaic, way too old, but oh so precious like refined gold. A man of the gospel, simple and pure, searching for truth, pursuing it for sure. Righteous, holy, and without blame, shunning evil, fortune, and fame. Trusting in Christ, following your heart, the only way to begin, the best place to start. We, the revolutionaries, one and all, salute you this day, Mr. Big and Tall. Happy birthday to the Grand Poobah of the Gospel Revolution. Kimo Doe, August 16th, 2011.
Thank
Happy
you.
Birthday, Michael.
Thank you, Rich.
You're welcome, sir. We love you, Michael. You know that.
You know, the
funny thing about this, all of this stuff, is that when anybody in this group cries, it's because we're so happy we don't know what to do with ourselves.
You're darn right.
It really is just amazing. And, you know, I certainly understand why someone who just met you, Richard, would have such a heart for you. I mean, Richard, I know Richard. There's people who know of Richard, and but I know him. He's been a personal friend of mine for many years, and he touches everybody. It doesn't make any difference whether it's the cashier. It just doesn't make any difference. And he does it in the dough way. So
in the dough way.
I'd have to go into a whole thing to explain that. I'm not going to do it. It's my pet name for my buddy.
GospelRevolution.com. Man was not made for the law. The law was made for man.
Oh, that's good, Richard.
And you've got to we've got to remember these things. I mean, there's boundaries, and we need to step. We won't grow or have any experiences outside those boundaries if we're never allowed to step outside or beyond. The older you get, the more your brain cells get filled up with garbage, and it's hard to dump those things. I've tried to do one of those dumps where you just go and plug in somewhere and just let all the old crap out and make room for the new. It just doesn't work that way. You got to override it somehow, and I'm working on that. Radiation Boy here.
Oh, not you went from chemo to Radiation Boy?
I'm Radiation Boy.
Are you
glowing?
Are you radiating the love of Christ?
Well, I bring new meaning to the term, nuke them till they glow.
Here's the important question. Is it bringing relief to the pain? That's what we want to know.
Yes, there has been some relief. Not as much as I'd hoped for, but we still got plenty of time left. There's 2 more days this week, 4 days next week, and a day the week after to see where we stand on the radiation on the tumor that's in the bone there that's pushing on that nerve that's causing all this pain. But it's okay because I've gone to an alternative source of energy now. It's called radiation. I walk through the house at night, don't need any lights.
Nice.
I can see everything around me glowing just like me. It's great, you know.
Bro, do you remember the Addams Family show?
And
when Uncle Fester used to put the light bulb in his mouth and it would turn on?
I don't even have to put it in there. I just carry it around in my hand.
Oh, all right. Well, that works.
Is it always like this around here, Mildred?
Always. Oh, and it's so embarrassing.
No, I love it. It reminds me of home.
So that guy, Crapolo, was that his name that we listened to on...
Yeah, Crapolo Dollar, that's exactly right.
Yeah, he's full of crap, because, you know, Paul said in Galatians 2:21, I do not frustrate the grace of God, for if righteousness comes by the law, Christ is dead in vain. And he's preaching man's righteousness to be right with God and get blessings. And in Galatians 5:4, Paul said, Christ has become of no effect unto you, whosoever you are justified by the law... You are fallen from grace. So he's trying to encourage people to fall from grace. And he's full of crap. And he needs to know that he's full of crap. So I condemn the words that came out of his mouth in a teaching. I just condemn those words.
We're united in that condemnation, Richard Ball. Gospel Revolution.
When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Richard. If a person was logging on and hadn't heard you before and had no experience with the gospel, they might hear something like this on the 700 Club or on TBN. And somebody would say, here's a guy who is seriously ill that is in denial. Well, I mean, that's a legitimate question, is it not?
It's a legitimate question, but I don't deny that there's sickness in my body. I don't deny that cancer is trying to get me and put me down, but you know what? It doesn't matter. I have a victory either way it goes. If I'm gone from this earth in a year or two or three, I'm with the Lord. If I got 20 or 25 years as we work on this thing with all these different options and all this stuff that's available to medical science today, and I live another 25 or 30 years, praise God. He's given us the wisdom The doctor's the wisdom. He's given me wisdom. It's in me. Christ was made unto me. Wisdom, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption. So whichever way it goes, I don't have to worry. I know where my home is. My home is in heaven. My home is with the Lord. I belong to Him, and I just can't think of any place I'd rather be. But while I'm going through this, I'm up to the challenge. I am undaunted by what's going on in my body. I don't even feel it. I don't even know it's there. I don't focus on it.
I've been a healthy eater and an exerciser and a walker, and I've run marathons most of my life. And yet others in my family that just let themselves go are healthy. Everyone's different. Everybody is different. Everybody functions differently, even though we have the same organs. It's the same with the gospel. The gospel works differently in you than it works in me. And each one of you has something unique about you, some special gift, something in your makeup, something in your, I don't even know what to call it. Something inside of you. That's right. But He works in you differently than He does in me. And my attitude because of the gospel has changed. Why? I don't know. The doctors don't understand it. Richard, we don't know what to do with you. You need to come and talk to all our patients. So when I've got some patients that are stubborn or don't understand something, I want you to come in and talk with them. And I spend a lot of time at the doctor's offices, and not because of me, but because of other people that they want me to come in and talk with. I love a challenge. And what I'm going through now, physically, is a challenge. It really is. And whether I live or die, doesn't matter. I've lived 66 good years, really good years. I've had some bad memories, but guess what? They don't affect the fact that life has been good to me. God has been good to me. He did all these things for me through the gospel and put them in me. Colossians chapter 2, verse 2, says that God has given us everything we need for life and godliness. So what else can we ask Him for? We can't. It's in us. Or it's in someone that's close to us. Or someone who's not close to us. We may cross paths with that person somewhere down the road. I've known Michael for 20 years now. I heard about him before that, but I've known him for 20 years and what he's been doing. And I came out of this garbage called Christianity in 1987, 88, around that time frame. The gospel is so important. So it doesn't matter whether I live or die. I belong to the Lord. I've got Him with me now. I'll be with Him for all eternity. I'm an eternal being. This physical body is just going to give up the ghost one day and say, yep, I'm tired of you. I'm going to lay down over here. You and your spirit, you go somewhere else. And to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. So I know where I'm going. I don't have to worry about it. It's attitude. It's understanding. It's knowing. It's the gospel. And how it does it, don't have a clue. And it does it. And it does it perfectly. And it does it so well. That you can put a smile on your face when you are faced with challenges in this life that you have no clue as how they're going to turn out. And you can just go through it. One day at a time. Jesus said something before He died and went to the cross, or before He went to the cross and died. He said something that really has impacted me in my life. He says, why worry about tomorrow? Today has enough problems of its own. So today I don't have prostate cancer, but tomorrow I find out that I do. Does that change anything? No. Because tomorrow never comes. When you wake up tomorrow, what is it? It's today. So tomorrow's behind you. It's really always behind you. It's there in front of you, but it ends up being behind you. There is no day after tomorrow. There isn't, really. First you got to come to tomorrow, which becomes today. And then the next day becomes today. And the next day. So the terms we use sometimes are a little strange and hard to explain, and it can be ludicrous at times to say things like that. I got to make Jesus the Lord of your life. That's ludicrous. God made Jesus Lord. Acts 2:36. Hear ye, O Israel, this Jesus that you have crucified, God hath made both Lord and Christ. Past tense. We're not waiting for God to make Jesus Lord. I'm the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. That's why He died. One of the reasons is to make me righteous and holy so I could be joined to God. Not by my choice, but by His choice. So I'm hopeful that there's some new treatments, experimental, that will help me, They've had some pretty good success at UCLA Medical Center. 70% success rate on with a lot of their patients in different kinds of cancer. And that's good. That's good. I can live with a bone pain as long as they deal with the lungs and whatever. The liver, it's still solid and good, even though there's 19 tumors and they're growing. My liver is still functioning very well. And you can function with 30% of your liver. It'll regenerate. It may not function 100%, but it'll regenerate and grow back if they have to carve it out. I've learned a lot of things about this, but I want you to know that if this doesn't work, there's another option. And there's a clinic in Houston called MD Anderson, and they have 5 or 6 buildings and a hotel of their own. And they're treating people for cancer. They're having good success with certain types of cancer. But here I've got liver, bone, lung, prostate now. There's more out there. I'm not sure if I should go out and get the rest of them or not. I've been thinking about it, saying, well, if I have them all, and then the doctors take care of it all, then there's hope for other people. So there's a lot being done, and I'm hopeful. And I'm not going to lay down and die. I'm not going to give up. I have some numbness in my extremities, fingers and hands, in my feet, my toes, from the chemo. And it might take a year for that to wear off if I get off the chemo. But now I'm going back on some new treatments that may require or may cause that to stay for me to continue in that condition. But I can still walk around. I can drive on certain days. I can't feel a lot with my fingers, and sometimes I pick up something and it drops and I don't know it because I can't get the pressure and the strength there. But it doesn't deter me from continuing to do what I love to do best, and that's talk about the gospel, the good news. And as Mike has said so many times, there is no bad news in the good news. I'm telling somebody that Jesus came so you can go to heaven. But if you don't believe in him, you're going to hell. That's not the gospel. Sorry. And we need the kids to know this. We need the kids to know that they're born into righteousness, holiness, that they're redeemed, that they have the wisdom of God in them from the earliest age when they were conceived in the womb and born into this world. Because you're not zero when you're born, you're 9 months in most cases. There are premature births, and there are births of babies that stayed in the womb longer than they should have. And they had to take a crowbar to get them out of there. Come out of there, you little sucker! No, I like it in here. This is my perimeter. I feel good. Nope, you're coming out. Like, give me your head, and I'm going to jerk you out of there. It's funny. Some kids just want to stay where it's safe. And parents want to keep their kids where they're safe and never let them out of that perimeter. But it all is so beautiful. The perimeters are there for us to break out of. And they get bigger and bigger all the time. You know, the universe is our limit. And it's limitless. And the gospel and what God has done through the gospel is limitless. We're still learning. We're still finding out these things. What happened at the cross? We were there. Ask yourself. God put it in you. The wisdom of God. And you'll find out all these things that happened at the cross, and it will change you. And you won't even know that you're being changed. Oh, I'm going through so much. But you know what? Every day is a new day. What a blessing. What a blessing to be alive and to be in Christ. And I had nothing to do with it. I just laid there, and it was put in me. My goodness. The joy of the Lord. It just comes out automatically. Don't hide it. Leave that smile on your face. Going through tough times, I've got pain right now, but I don't care. You know why? My focus is not on me and my situation and my pain. My focus is on the gospel and what God has put in me and what more I can glean from this, what more I can understand. And that's the only thing I really pray for, is understanding of what God has already done. And Paul told so many people this in the letters that he wrote. Pray for this understanding. Pray that you would know these things. And that's how you get transformed, by the renewing of your mind. And that word transformed there is the same word used to describe Jesus being transfigured on the mount. It's the same word. You will be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I like that. I think that's wonderful. God has blessed all of you up here. Mm-hmm. And I'm blessed by being up here with you. And I'm going to continue to come back. And I'm already put it on my calendar to come back in June. And it's tentative, depending on what goes on. But I am going to try my hardest to be back here in June when Michael comes up. And I know you won't cancel him. You won't. Unless it's a big storm in the latter part of winter and you all freeze.
That's possible.
That's right. And then we'll thaw you out along with the mastodons from the Ice Age, and we'll bring Michael up anyway, and he can preach to the frozen crowd. Yeah, the frozen chosen. That's exactly right. So bless you. I bless the Lord every day and thank him for everything he's done. I want you to know that you're blessed of God. Just giving thanks. That's what it's all about. Thank you very much.
Gospel Revolution.
I keep getting saved over and over again here, and it's been glorious. I'm excited to be a part of all this. Well, pick my peas. Well, I think all of us, Michael included, we're all still trying to understand what this gospel has done for us and done to us, and the fact that we're joined with God and we're one with him, and he's all in all, and he's one with his entire creation. I don't care if it's plants, animals, planets, universe, the earth, each individual. We're all equal as human beings in God's sight because we're all one with him. So how can there be anything less than coming to an understanding of who we are and allowing that to permeate our entire being so we can see everybody as God sees them, as equal, holy, righteous, sanctified, having his wisdom, being redeemed, being accepted in the beloved, sons of God. It's just, it's something you really can't describe to somebody until that feeling comes out of you, deep inside of your being, and flows from you and into your mind, and your mind gets a grasp and a hold of it and says, wow, that's what it's all about. And that will change you. And you won't even know it, and you're being changed. And you're seeing everybody differently, and you're thinking things differently, and you're analyzing things differently, you're perceiving things differently. You just love everybody. You just want to go out there and just tell everybody about it. And that's what it's all about. Getting the word out. Telling people exactly what he's done for us. Not hiding it. Not saying it's a mystery anymore. Because it's not.
On this Wednesday night, we are in mourning, frankly, with our family all over the planet for our dear brother Richard Mull, who passed away yesterday afternoon at his home in Southern California. You guys know Richard, who have been logging onto this program for the better part of 7 years on Wednesday nights. And if there's one thing that Richard embraced and loved and promoted and was thrilled about, was being part of a revolution, the gospel revolution. And we are honored right now to have online the president and founder of the gospel revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael.
Good evening.
Nicely done.
Thank you. I've been getting notes and messages from people ever since last night, and many things I did know, but many things I did not know. His wife, Eva, as I was out there last week, just a week ago, and spent 3 days there with Richard at his bedside, and she told me about, while Richard was in treatment, that he had met this woman and her daughter. The woman was going through chemo at the same time, but she and her daughter, of course, Richard, if you were around Richard, you were going to have a relationship with him, whether you liked it or not. It's just the man that Richard is. And when they got ready to leave one of the chemo sessions, he admitted to his wife that he had given her $700. Now, this is somebody he just met, and she asked him, she says, why did you give a total stranger $700? And he began to cry, and he said, I love those people. Sorry.
It's nothing to be sorry about. Who do you think he meant by those people?
It was everyone.
Just by a point of reference for you guys that don't know about Richard, is that Richard has a tremendous sense of humor.
Oh, God.
And his cousin is Martin Mull, the famous actor and comedian. It runs in the family, you guys. here's a guy that literally, as the years went on, after he came under the teaching of Michael L. Williams and the Gospel and the Gospel Revolution, literally saw his family as pretty much anybody he met.
He sure did. That I experienced that up close and personal by traveling with him. I admit my embarrassment of him on a couple of occasions. He was just relentless. Suffice it to say that this was very common for Richard. And the people he met, he loved forever. And he never stopped. And he traveled with me on many occasions to meetings. I think one of his very favorite was Nova Scotia. The picture that we put out of he and I sitting on the back of a boat. I think these were just highlights in Richard's life, and it was a delight to have him along. And the people that he met, he stayed in contact with up until the time that he was unable to, and he helped them in so many ways, and he would find out if they had a need, and the next thing they knew, a check was in the mail. And now let me tell you, now Richard was not a wealthy man,
right?
I think that's
an important point to make as we're telling about the generosity of Richard giving money to people. He was not wealthy, but
no.
He still was an incredibly generous person.
Oh, in every way, not just with his money, but with his smile and his laughter and his tears. He was very generous with his tears.
Michael, the thing that he loved more than anything was the gospel, the understanding that he and all human beings, including everybody, Eva and the woman that he met in the hospital, and all the people that will be at that funeral, and yourself and Sean and me and everybody that was at the Gospel Revolution Summit, your house, where Richard appeared like magically on the screen of your computer monitor, that we are all perfect and righteous and one. He loved that message. He got up every Friday for the last, well, many, many months, so over a year, to go and do this lunch and learn at his accounting company. There is nothing that Richard Mull cared more about was to let everybody know that they were perfect.
Well, it was the salvation that he experienced through the saving of the soul and his ability to see life and existence through a different light, and certainly absent of the prism of guilt and judgment. And let me tell you, this man was free. My gosh, we really hope that everyone can experience the freedom that Richard had, and including his absolute and total freedom, and I can tell you this unequivocally, his total freedom from external spirituality.
What do you mean by that?
Richard never connected his diagnosis, his cancer, his suffering, his pain, and believe me, the pain was off the charts. And right up to the time that they put him on heavy morphine just to wait it out, if he could have said anything during that time, I know it would have been, "It is well with my soul." One of the comments from Jackie Bernard, Jackie's very relationship with Billy Thompson. Billy.
Now, you guys need to know that Jackie and Billy met in Michael's living room for the first time about a year ago, just almost literally a year ago last August. Richard was on the computer screen at the Gospel Revolution Summit. So Richard Mull's presence in the initiation of their relationship is no small part of their history.
Well, it's even more than that. And I know that Jackie would give me permission to say this. I think he said it publicly. But Jackie did not have the money to get here, Glenn, and Richard sent him the funds to get here.
I did not know that.
I could tell these stories all day long. Just before I go, I have to tell you the comments in Jackie Barnard's email or comments on Facebook. I'm really not sure which one they were. But he, because I had heard Richard say this 100 times if I've heard him say it once. And those of you that know him will recall this. And he told Jackie, you know, he said, if you hear one day that I'm dead and I'm gone, he said, there's just one thing I want you to say. Well, pick my peas. So, Richard, that's ours to you tonight, my dear friend.
Pick my peas.
Pick my peas.
No doubt.
So we'll do that. We'll do that indeed. And we love you. We embrace your love that you had for all of us. And we will always.
No doubt.
Always speak of you.
No, and Richard's legacy will go on forever and ever. And as you said so wonderfully, Michael, in your comments about Richard yesterday, if you've been touched by this gospel revolution, you've been touched by Richard Mull.
Yeah, for sure.
No doubt. Hey, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Glenn.
And have a pleasant rest of your evening. Good travels to you, and we love you.
Thank you. Love you, too.
Okay. We love you so much, Richard. Thank you.
All right. And thanks to all the GRs out there. Love you guys, everybody. All the GRs. 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 All the GRs.
Radiant spirit of living, the wonderful gift of this life, the awesome state of thanksgiving, never having a struggle or fight, the glorious nature of being, I found what it is to be free, observing and finally seeing, we are one entity. As I look in your eyes, I realize I'm introducing myself to me. Oh, the joy of the journey, we must walk it alone, learning the art of trusting your heart and to follow wherever it goes, and knowing there's nothing dividing, knowing we're totally whole, knowing there's nothing worth hiding, it's brought sweet peace to my soul. As I look in your eyes, I realize I'm introducing myself to me. We are you, hey, 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 are you? Every last one of us, beautiful human.
Glenn, this is Richard. Michael, Grant, Sean, everybody listening, I'm going to have to take my rightful place on my throne.
All right, wait, before you go, did you listen to the very first webcast 6 years ago?
I have to admit that I'm guilty as charged.
All right, that's yes. What I thought. That was good.
He was probably our one American listener.
All right, I'm going to head to the throne, and gentlemen and ladies and everybody listening, gospel revolutionaries everywhere, you're terrific. Just keep on keeping on. Be yourself and just let the gospel do the rest. Love you all.
Gospel revolutionaries all around the planet, it is that we must leave you. But we have really enjoyed putting this podcast together with some of the greatest memories we have on tape of Richard John Mull. Richard, thank you for everything, but most of all, thank you for yourself.
You're welcome, you're welcome.
And as usual, here is the last word from Michael Williams, the founder and the president of the Gospel Revolution. Mike?
Thanks, everybody, for joining in. It has been a blast. And if you think this was good, hang on to your seats. It will get better and better. We love you a lot. Thank you for loving us.
Well, pick my peas.